जय राधा माधवा कुंज बिहारी। जय राधा माधवा कुंज बिहारी। जय गोपी जन वल्लभा जय गिरिवर धारी। जय गिरिवर धारी। जय यशोदा नंदना जय ब्रज जन रंजना। जय यशोदा नंदना जय प्रज जन रंजना। जय यमुना तीर वनचारी जय कुंज बिहारी। जय यमुना तीर वनचारी जय कुंज बिहारी। जय यमुना तीर वनचारी जय कुंज बिहारी। जयो यमुना तीर वनचारी जय कुंज बिहारी। जय राधा माधवा जय कुंज बिहारी। जय राधा माधवा जय कुंज बिहारी। जय श्री श्री राधा माधव की। जय श्री श्री जगन्नाथ बलदेव सुभद्रामयी की। जय श्रील प्रभुपाद की। जय श्रील गुरुदेव की। निताय गौर प्रेमनंदे। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। So we welcome devotees today to Gauranga Center to read from one of the most famous verses from Bhagavad Gita dealing with the nature of the soul, chapter 2, text 20. Na jayate mriyate va kadachin. Nayam bhutva bhavita va na bhuyaha. Ajo nitya shashvatoyam purano. Na hanyate hanyamane sharire. Na jayate mriyate va kadachin. Nayam bhutva bhavita va na bhuyaha. Ajo nitya shashvatoyam purano. Na hanyate hanyamane sharire. Na jayate mriyate va kadachin. Nayam bhutva bhavita va na bhuyaha. Ajo nitya shashvatoyam purano. Na hanyate hanyamane sharire. Prabhu, would you like to chant? Na jayate mriyate va kadachin. Nayam bhutva bhavita va na bhuyaha. Ajo nitya shashvatoyam purano. Na hanyate hanyamane sharire. Na jayate mriyate va kadachin. Nayam bhutva bhavita va na bhuyaha. Ajo nitya shashvatoyam purano. Na hanyate hanyamane sharire. Matajis. Na jayate mriyate va kadachin. Nayam bhutva bhavita va na bhuyaha. O nitya shashvatoyam purano. Hanyate hanyamane sharire. Na jayate mriyate va kadachin. Nayam bhutva bhavita va na bhuyaha. Ajo nitya shashvatoyam purano. Nahanyate hanyamane sharire. Na, never. Jayate, takes birth. Mriyate, dies. Va, either, kadachit, at any time, past, present, or future. Na, never, ayam, this, bhutva, having come into being. Bhavita, will come to be va or na not bhuyaha or is again coming to be ajaha unborn nityaha eternal shashvataha permanent ayam this puranaha the oldest na never hanyate is killed hanyamane being killed sharire the body translation and purport by his divine grace AC Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada ki please repeat the translation for the soul there is neither birth nor death at any time he has not come into being does not come into being and will not come into being he is unborn eternal ever existing and primeval he is not slain when the body is slain please hear the purport qualitatively the small atomic fragmental part of the supreme spirit is one with the supreme he undergoes no changes like the body sometimes the soul is called the steady or kutastha the body is subject to six kinds of transformation it takes its birth from the womb of the mother's body remains for some time grows produces some effects gradually dwindles and at last vanishes into oblivion the soul however does not go through such changes the soul is not born but because he takes on a material body the body takes its birth the soul does not take birth there and the soul does not die anything which has birth also has death and because the soul has no birth he therefore has no past present or future he is eternal ever existing and primeval that is there is no trace in history of his coming into being under the impression of the body we seek the history of birth etc of the soul the soul does not at any time become old as the body does the so called old man therefore feels himself to be in the same spirit as in his childhood or youth the changes of the body do not affect the soul the soul does not deteriorate like a tree nor anything material the soul has no byproduct either the byproducts of the body namely children are also different individual souls and owing to the body they appear as children of a particular man the body develops because of the soul's presence but the soul has neither offshoots nor change therefore the soul is free from the six changes of the body in the Katha Upanishad 1:18 we also find a similar passage which reads na jayate mriyate va vipaschin nayam kutaschin na bhuva kaschit ajo nitya shashvatoyam purano na hanyate hanyamane sharire the meaning and purport of this verse is the same as in the Bhagavad Gita but here in this verse there is one special word vipaschit which means learned or with knowledge the soul is full of knowledge or full always with consciousness therefore consciousness is the symptom of the soul even if one does not find the soul within the heart where he is situated one can still understand the presence of the soul simply by the presence of consciousness sometimes we do not find the sun in the sky owing to the clouds or for some other reason but the light of the sun is always there and we are convinced that it is there for daytime as soon as there is a little light in the sky early in the morning we can understand that the sun is in the sky similarly since there is some consciousness in all bodies whether man or animal we can understand the presence of the soul this consciousness of the soul is however different from the consciousness of the supreme because the supreme consciousness is all knowledge past present and future the consciousness of the individual soul is prone to be forgetful when he is forgetful of his real nature he obtains education and enlightenment from the superior lessons of Krishna but Krishna is not like the forgetful soul if so Krishna's teachings of Bhagavad Gita would be useless. There are two kinds of souls, namely the minute particle soul, Anuatma, and the super soul, Vibhuatma. This is also confirmed in the Katha Upanishad 1-20 in this way. Anoraniyan mahato mahiyan atma asya jantur nihato nihito guhayam tam akrato pashyati vita shoko dhatu prasadan mahimanam atmanaha. Both the super soul Paramatma and the atomic soul Jivatma are situated on the same tree of the body, within the same heart of the living being. And only one who has become free from all material desires, as well as lamentations, can, by the grace of the Supreme, understand the glories of the soul. Krishna is the fountainhead of the super soul also, as it will be disclosed in the following chapters. And Arjuna is the atomic soul, forgetful of his real nature. Therefore, he requires to be enlightened by Krishna or by his bona fide representative, the spiritual master. Om Ajnana Timirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Middham Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Sri Chaitanya Mano Bishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru, Shri Yutapada Kamalam, Shri Gurum Vaishnavamscha, Shri Rupam Sagrajatam, Sahagana Raghunatam, Vitamtam Sajivam, Sadvaitam Savadutam, Parijana Sahitam, Krishna Chaitanya Devam, Shri Radha Krishna Padam, Sahagana Lalita, Shri Vishakan Vitamscha, He Krishna Karuna Sindho, Dinabhando Jagatpate, Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gorange Radhe Vrindavanishwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Namo Mahomadaya Krishna Prema Pradayate Krishnaya Krishna Chaitanya Namne Gaure Tvishe Namaha Vancha Kalpataru Vyascha Kripaha Sindhubhya Evacha Patithanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabho Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Actually, we wanted to start this idea of before we start chanting Bhagavad Gita, or at least we look at the verse, we should at least state one episode from Srila Prabhupada's nectar. So tomorrow morning I will take Prabhupada nectar before Bhagavatam. But I wrote in my notes that day from Leelamrita, there was an episode which is very nice because it's instructive on the verse. Srila Prabhupada had just initiated a few devotees and it was past midnight, very late, and he was going to go off the next day. So Amarendra Prabhu asks Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada, how can we make them, meaning the living entities, take to this Krishna consciousness? According to Leelamrita, Amarendra's personality was intense, impassioned, and so was his inquiry. So he was fired up. He said, Srila Prabhupada, how can we make them take to this Krishna consciousness? What can we say when we go to preach to people? What can we say that will make them take it? His voice was heavy and forceful, demanding action. I'm reading from Leelamrita. Now, Srila Prabhupada replies, you simply ask them to please chant Hare Krishna. Whether they take it or not, that is their business. That is between them and Krishna. But you have done your business. You have done your duty for Krishna by simply asking them, please chant Hare Krishna. Jai Shri Prabhupada ki. So this is a nice episode because it tells us sometimes we think that it is because of us that someone is becoming Krishna conscious. It's very easy It's very easy to think because I have all these experience and I have all these things about me, I am the one who can change someone. But here Prabhupada very gently instructs us that all we have to do is actually just request them to chant Hare Krishna. That's all we have to do. And Prabhupada is very clear here. Whether they take it or not is not our business. Because that is between them and Krishna. That's why devotees are not worried. That's why we don't become overly attached to the idea that, oh, I've made this devotee. This devotee belonged to me. He's my cultivation. The cultivation is Prabhupada's. The cultivation is Krishna's. But we are instruments. If we preach in that way, we'll become very peaceful. We will not think that this is my congregation, that's my congregation, this is your congregation, this is my man, you're taking my person. All these ideas, you know, will not be there. And we will transcend these things. So this is a nice example for us. And the other reason why this is connected to today's verse is, we sometimes forget that we are not this body, isn't it? Actually, it's not sometimes. We always forget that we are not this body. That is our main problem. And when a preacher believes that he is the reason why someone has come to Krishna consciousness, then actually how much bodily conscious he is, we don't understand that also. So actually Prabhupada was very gently instructing his best leaders that we are really instruments. 11:33 of Bhagavad Gita is very clear. Mayai vaite nihata purvameva nimitta matra bhavya savya sachi. We are nothing but instruments in the hands of the Lord. Therefore, as instruments, we don't have a say where we go. We don't have a say what Krishna wants. If Krishna wants, that is good for us. Krishna doesn't want, that is not good for us. Sometimes we make so many plans. We want to go north, but suddenly Krishna decides we have to go south. It happens. So we should accept that that is what Krishna wants. If you try and try and try and try and bang your head against the wall and stand on your head upside down for 30,000 years and still you cannot do something, then it is very clear that Krishna wants something else. But don't wait for 32,000 years because we'll be dead by then. Better we do it now, you know. And that's why we should chant very sincerely. In this verse, Prabhupada says very nicely that Prabhupada actually compares, because in this verse, again, the great qualities of the soul are given. We understand that actually the soul doesn't take birth and it doesn't die. And because it doesn't come into being, doesn't take birth, then how can it have any byproducts? Meaning, there is no soul. I mean, there are no children. There are no relatives. The soul doesn't have a baby soul. You know, it's not like I come and say, this is my baby soul. There's no such thing. Every soul is a soul. Nobody says, oh, you know, this soul belongs to me and that soul belongs to me. Every soul is individual. So Prabhupada very nicely gives us the understanding of the nature of the soul by telling us the nature of the body. You notice in the purport, that's how he approaches the nature of the soul. Why? Because our acharyas always tell us, sometimes to understand light, we have to understand what is dark. So the nature of the body is also very important. And Prabhupada tells us that the body always undergoes 6 transformations. In the beginning, we are all born. And then Prabhupada says, for a while, we remain for some time. Meaning, we exist, you know, and we go on. And we are just growing naturally. So, from the time of birth, we exist for some time, and then growth begins very quickly. You find we grow very quickly when we are young. But after a while, you notice, when we are young and we grow very quickly, we reach the peak in the 20s very often. And at that time, most often, we produce byproducts of this body, which are known as children. And that's the time the children become offshoots of what we have. So that becomes the first, second, third, produces effects, fourth. And after producing effects, then you find that once you hit late 20s and you hit 30s, things start changing. Whatever you could do before, you are slowing down. And then when you hit 40s, you slow down some more. When you hit 50, you start feeling a little bit more. When you hit 60, again it is reducing. If some people pass 60s, they reach 70s, then they are feeling the strain. And if you talk to people who are 80, 90, many of them tell you, we are just waiting for the body to sign off, basically, because it's too long already, and it's too much pain, too much difficulty. So the point is, while the body produces effects, byproducts, eventually, after a certain age, the body must dwindle. Science, Prabhupada very often quoted, would tell us that all the time that we are born, while we are born, we are also dying. Our cells are generating and regenerating all the time. It doesn't take a rocket scientist to tell you that. You will also realize that every day, something that appears new becomes old by the end of the day. Whatever that is fresh must deteriorate. So deterioration comes before, in the words of Prabhupada, we vanish into oblivion. And that is death. So the fact is, because we are so attached to this sharir, this transformation is very often painful. Up to the point when we have children, it is nice. Provided children are nice. But if the children are not nice, then even that side effects or byproducts can become hell to us. But the fact is, everything deteriorates. This is one thing we have to accept. And deterioration is part of life. Why? Because this body by nature is the opposite of the soul. Soul, Prabhupada says, is kutastha. Kutastha means steady. But actually, the nature of the body is, it is anything but steady. It is always unsteady. So if your body is unsteady, Prabhus and Matajis, how can our relationships be steady? You think about it. If we are so attached to our body, and body's nature is unsteady, then all our relationships are also unsteady. Because our relationships are based on body. That's the logic. You can't refute it. It's very straightforward. But if you're attached to the soul, the nature of the soul is steady. Then the nature of all your relationships in this world also becomes steady. That is why you see advanced devotees always have very steady relationships anywhere they are. They don't have problems in relationships. In fact, those with problems in relationships come to such devotees because they see them as powerful, steady people. This is a symptom that they are not attached to the body. They are attached to their soul. If one is attached to the body, lust, anger, and greed will immediately capture you. That is why very often we fall victim to anger. Vishwamitra tried very hard to control his senses artificially without Krishna. But the result was first Shakuntala. That was the result. And then after that, there was Ramba. Right? So you see, the result or the byproduct of anger may be an offspring. But the result of that, in Vishwamitra's case, was the downfall of the senses. And the first time when he lost his senses, Mahabharata tells us, he lost it to lust. Second time, he lost it to anger. So when he conquered lust, he lost anger. When he thought he conquered anger, he got caught by lust. So the point is, as long as you are attached to the body, one of these will catch you. You can't escape. Either you get slapped from the back or you get slapped from the front, but somewhere along the line, the slap is going to come. Because they're all part of Maya Devi. And this we forget. We don't understand that finally our body becomes exhausted. But Prabhupada makes a very intelligent point here. He says, have you noticed how no matter how young or old a person is, for them they are always young. They always have the spirit. An old man doesn't really consider himself old. He says, you know, yes, I have this bodily aches and this and that. But in his heart is very young. We always don't realize how old we are until we see our children. Or until somebody reminds you, you know, Prabhu, no more hair. Then you know, oh yeah. Once upon a time I had hair, you know. Or someone says, oh, Mataji, you're dyeing your hair. Ah, yes. Because once upon a time I didn't dye my hair. So those are the only times when we realize that we're actually deteriorating. Why? Because we are so attached to the body. But Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita insists that when we chant Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare, when we are attached to devotional service, then the true nature of deterioration cannot touch us. Us meaning the living entities. Instead, the body may go, but you'll find that the body becomes a great receptacle for devotees to do great service. This is the purpose of the human body. The human body is meant for service. But if the human body is meant for sense gratification, then we cannot understand the nature of the soul. And Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita tells us very simply, how long can you enjoy Prabhus and Matajis? How long? Eventually the senses will give up. In Bhagavatam there's a verse, you know, it is in 11th canto, 2nd chapter, 49th verse. Very important verse. Dehendriya prana mano diyamyo janmapyaya shud bayatarshakritche samsara dharme avimuyamanaha smritya hari bhagavata pradanaha. So to understand the nature of the soul, it is better to understand the nature of the body. Then we can contrast it. So the nature of the body is given in 11.249 of Srimad Bhagavatam. And there, it is nicely stated that as long as one is in this material world, this body is always subject to the following things. The first, it will be subject to birth and decay. We cannot escape that. Even though we try very hard to keep this body steady, it will decay. Have you noticed how when death comes, the body cannot be maintained very long? You realize that the body only is tolerable when the soul is in the body. Otherwise, no one in their right mind will keep a body too long. No one. No one. In fact, it is in our tradition that the moment death takes place, very quickly, the body leaves. Why? Because we are not attached to the body. We love the person who inhabited the body. We respect that person. Why? Because that person is the person who gave life to the body. Body is only shell. So when the shell goes, we don't keep the shell. No one keeps the shell. So this point is important. Birth and decay. This is the first thing that happens to us. Those who are born, they must decay. That's why in the purport, Prabhupada says, there is deterioration. Bhautikanam cha bhavanam. That means anything that starts must deteriorate. This means practically, Prabhus and Matajis, do not expect anything that belongs to you not to deteriorate. Sometimes people say, what's the point of learning all this? It's very high flown. But the practical point of Bhagavad Gita is, anything that you keep will deteriorate. Anything that is an offshoot of your body, your children, they will also deteriorate. Normally, you deteriorate faster than them. But relationships in the world also deteriorate when they are on the basis of body. Please remember that. Jai Sri Jagannath Baladev Subhadramai Ki. This is very important. Those who really understand that I'm not this body, the first area that they will conquer is in their relationships with devotees and the world. You notice all our acharyas? Our acharyas are friendly to everyone. Why? Because they're not attached to the body. You cannot be friendly in nature until you are detached from the body. Those who are attached to the body, they cannot make friends with everyone. The Goswamis could make friends with ruffians and saints. Why? Because they were not on the bodily platform. For them, everyone was sent by Krishna. And everyone is part and parcel of Krishna. So this way, we become very free in the world. Otherwise, this is the reason why the husbands fight with the wives fight with the husbands, the children fight with the parents. This is the reason why we all have misunderstandings. Because I felt this way, you felt that way. Why? Because my senses, you did not satisfy. And your senses, I could not satisfy. I want something, you can't give it to me. But the I is the body. When there is a fight between two people, you ask them the reason for the fight, there's only one reason. One of them could not satisfy the other person's senses. That's all. If you want, use this formula. Try it throughout every problem two people have ever had, and you will find there's only one reason. The other person could never satisfy the sense of the other person. That's all. And that is why it is bodily consciousness. So birth and decay is the first thing. Second is life air, prana. Bhagavatam tells us, this prana of life air is always harassed by hunger and thirst. Hunger and thirst. As we grow older, this becomes more difficult. Have you noticed how you become very grouchy when you're hungry? Huh? You notice that, right? You're not in a good mood because no prasadam. What if we had this program at the end, we say, you know what, no prasadam today. From now on, Gauranga Center, no more prasadam. Just come here and go home. Nobody will come, right? Our attendance will go down. Only those who are fasting nirjal every day will come. Nobody else will come. Because our prana requires to be satisfied by hunger and thirst. But then why is it that our acharyas tell us to fast? The reason to fast is simple. We control our senses. The senses must be controlled by the soul. Or else the soul will be controlled by the senses. Then we are in difficulty. So when we become disturbed because of hunger and thirst, it's a very good sign of how attached we are to the body. The next point Bhagavatam tells us is very nice, is that the mind's nature is that it is always anxious. From the day you are born, you will always have this problem with the mind. Because the nature of the mind is that it is anxious. If you accept that it's someone's nature, then half the battle is won, isn't it? If supposing you get married to someone, then you realize, oh, my husband is always angry in the morning. Just 1 hour he's very angry, after that he's fine. Once you accept that about him, you will find many innovative ways to go around that 1 hour, isn't it? Either you sleep in for 1 hour, so he gets angry with everyone except you. Or you disappear in the bathroom and take a long bath for 1 hour, anger finish, you come out. Or you chant, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare. And tell him, this is my 1 hour of chanting. His anger also doesn't touch you. So my point is, if we accept that the nature of the world or the nature of the mind is that it is anxious, then you're not anxious. You're only anxious when you cannot accept that which is in front of you. That is why we become anxious. You see the point? The real trick is to accept. If you expect why the mind should be anxious, then you are in trouble. You are going against the nature's laws. Can you really stand up and petition to Krishna? Krishna, I disagree with your stringent laws of material nature. Can you try that? You'll just get slapped by it. But if you say, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, when your mind is anxious, then what happens? The mind becomes peaceful. Because you tell the mind, it's okay, it's your nature. What is the problem? Why waste time on the nature? Better I chant Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Then I'm free and the mind cannot catch me. So the mind's anxiety is saved. Then Bhagavatam tells us intelligence is even better. Intelligence runs after that which cannot be obtained. Imagine, this is our nature. When intelligence is not used for studying of Srila Prabhupada's scriptures, I mean the scriptures and Srila Prabhupada's books, then your intelligence will run after that which you cannot obtain. It will run after unrealistic expectations. It will run after scenarios that will never happen in your life. It will run after things that you don't have. In other words, it will become the reservoir for sense gratification. And remember, the moment you make your aim of life sense gratification, that's the day you become disturbed. The moment the day you make your day, the day comes when you make the aim of your life that I should satisfy the senses of Krishna first and I should serve the devotees first and then automatically my senses become satisfied. That day your mind's anxiety goes down. That day your intelligence becomes controlled. It doesn't run after that which cannot be obtained. This is the point. And finally, after a whole lifetime of a materialist living this way, what do you think happens to the body? The entire body and the senses become kritchai. Kritchai in Sanskrit means exhausted. That is why when devotees are going to leave the body, they are not exhausted. They are bright. You see their faces, you see their consciousness, it is very bright. Why? Because actually, they are not caught by the exhaustion of the senses. They are not caught by it. So this is a very, very important point. That is the difference between a devotee and a non-devotee. A non-devotee will finally become so tired of life that the exhaustion of the senses will just overwhelm them. Then they don't know what to do with life. So this is something we should remember. It is this verse, 11:249, will test how much we are actually bodily conscious and how much we are free of bodily consciousness. If you want to test, study this verse and you will see it. And the end point of this verse gives us a solution to come out of all these problems. The problem of the body, the problem of prana, the problem of birth, the problem of the mind and the problem of intelligence. Smritya Harihi Bhagavata Pradana. Bhagavata Pradana means the foremost of devotees. In other words, Bhagavatam tells us, a devotee who is simply not bewildered by this. In other words, a person who is not bewildered by the mind, the intelligence, the effect of deterioration on the body, that person will become the foremost of devotees. And how does he do that? By simply remembering the lotus feet of Hari. And how do we remember Krishna's? The best way is to chant. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama Hare. That is the verdict of this verse. Smritya Harihi Bhagavata Pradana. So if you want to come out of the clutches of I am body, simply remember Krishna. And the word that is nicely put is simply. In other words, don't complicate your remembrance of Krishna. This is the problem sometimes we face. Unnecessarily we complicate our devotional service. We plan so many things that we are not capable of doing. But the most basic thing of chanting we don't do. We read every book. But if you tell us, are you reading Prabhupada's books? No, I'm not reading Prabhupada's books. Why? Because the other books help me to understand Prabhupada's books. Where has Prabhupada ever said that we need another book to understand his book? There has never been a statement by our founder Acharya to say you have to read another book to understand his book. So this is a very important point for our society. And this is the reason why we are moving away and becoming more bewildered. Because we are not reading our founder Acharya's books. We are reading books in such a way that we are not studying Prabhupada. If you want to know, our spiritual masters write so many books in the hope that their realizations will make us study Srila Prabhupada's books. You ask His Holiness Bhakti Charu Maharaj, you ask His Holiness Radhanath Maharaj, you ask His Holiness Gopal Krishna Maharaj, in all the meetings that they come for, they insist we write the books to inspire the disciples to read Srila Prabhupada's books. But if we don't read Srila Prabhupada's books, then actually we're not even following the orders of our spiritual master. That's why if you want to remember Hari, you please read about Hari. By reading about Hari, you will chant Hari's name. Smritya Harihi Bhagavata Pradana. So in order for us to understand how to become soul conscious in terms of being Krishna conscious, we should understand that the goal of life should never be sense gratification. In 554, Rishabdev instructs his sons very nicely. Nunam pramattaha kurute vikarma yat indriya pritaya apripnoti nasadu manye yata atmanoyam asanapi kleshada asadehaha. This is another seminal verse for us to remember when we want to understand how to come out of this bodily consciousness. Because here Rishabdev tells his sons, my dear sons, when a person considers sense gratification the aim of his life, so that's our question today. What is my aim of life? Go home with this question, Prabhus and Matajis. What is the aim of my life actually? Why did I come to Krishna consciousness? Did I come because of prasadam? Yes, that's good. But after taking prasadam, why am I here? What do I want to change about myself? This is the question Rishabdev is asking. When a person considers, I just come to enjoy, or that my whole life is meant for social activity and social enjoyment, if that is my aim, then he says, he, that person, will certainly commit sinful activities. What is sinful activities? Prabhupada defines it very nicely. Any activity where you cannot remember Krishna is sinful activity. Such a simple definition. Any activity that doesn't connect you to Krishna is sinful activity. So if supposing you came to the Gauranga Center at 4:30 to clean it, that activity is Krishna conscious. Therefore, that activity does not have karma. It has actually transcended the material modes of nature. But if you were to just clean your business and not clean Krishna's place, and you consider that important, because that may not have any connection to Krishna, then you are in difficulty. So that is why any activity which is connected to Krishna, that immediately takes us out of sense gratification. Whether we like it or not, it actually helps. And Rishabdev tells us that he does not know that he has got this sharir, this body, due to his past misdeeds. What were those misdeeds? Of thinking he was this body. That was his misdeed. So in the past, we thought we were this body. And we committed all kinds of activities not Krishna conscious. And then we got this body. And now again we don't realize this body is temporary, but it is the cause of misery. You know why it is the cause of misery? Because it is temporary. That's why. Anything that is temporary cannot be permanent. So you like it very much, but it leaves you. Very painful, isn't it? When a child, you give a child a toy, and the child loves the toy, you take the toy away from the child, how does he feel? He feels very bad. So anything that you consider precious and belongs to you, when actually it doesn't, the moment it's taken away from you, you become disturbed. We do not realize that that thing in the first place does not belong to us. It belongs maybe to the body. It is a byproduct of the body. And the body is temporary, the byproduct is also temporary. This is the point we don't realize. And that is why Rishabhdev ends by saying that he doesn't realize that because of misdeed he has taken this body. But actually the living entity should not have taken this body. Why? Because he has been awarded it, because he has forgotten Krishna. And because he has forgotten Krishna, I think Rishabhdev ends that an intelligent man should not engage on these same activities again, because he'll get another material body and another material body and another material body. Every time we have a desire, it is the prime reason why another material body is reserved for us. It is reserved for us. So if you like a car now and you desire it very much, you don't get it now, don't worry. There is another body, next life, you'll get that car. But by that time, you know, you have lost interest in that car. So when you get it, you think, why did I get this car? Now I want another car. No problems, another body is coming. But you don't realize your body cannot catch up with your desires. Huh? They're always, you know, not in tandem. That is why very often, you know, my Guru Maharaj used to say, that is the reason why we are not happy with our husbands and wives. We have a wife, we have a husband. Then we think, the other person seems so much more better than my wife or my husband. Why? Because in past life you desired this wife. By the time you got this wife, you wanted someone else. But by that time, this wife has come, but the body for you to enjoy for the next person is on its way. So it never ends. And that is why we are always miserable. We always say, actually, I didn't want this. Why Krishna is giving this to me? You wanted it. That's why you got it. The only problem was the delayed effect. It came a bit delayed. That's all. Other than that, it's coming. So whatever we desire is going to be the cause of another body. But if we desire to use this body for Krishna, then no more bodies. In the sense, no more bodies. Isn't that what we want? Because then we get the spiritual body. That is why the big problem is actually not with the sharir. The body goes. The big problem, Bhagavatam 4th canto 27 and 28 chapter tells us, is with the subtle body. Because the subtle body has the mind, intelligence and false ego. These three move when we take on the next body. And they have the imprints, Narada Muni tells King Prachinabhar, he said, the imprints of the previous desires. And they follow us and follow us and follow us. The only way to break this cycle is very simply to remember Hari. Remember the word simple. Not complicatedly remembering Hari. Smritya Hari means simply remember. In other words, we simplify our existence. Live in such a way that your life only has Krishna, your duty. Krishna, your duty. Krishna, your duty. Krishna, your duty. You're expecting a third? There's no third. It's just Krishna, your duty. That's it. That is the meaning of simple. The moment you say Krishna is here, but I need my entertainment. So I need to take some time off, you know, take leave, annual leave from devotional service. Then December, I go and do whatever I want. Okay, I don't realize that I've prepared 7 more future bodies because of 1 month of December. And then I come back and become devotee again. And then I cry, you know, when the difficulties come on my head. Because the life is not simple. The life is very complicated. So that is why in the next verse, after 554, in 555, Rishabhdev concludes this point by telling very nice instruction. Parabhavastavarabodhajato yavannajignashata atmatatvam yavan kriyastavaridam manovai mano, the mind. karmatmakam yena sharira bandha. So the translation is important. He ends by saying, as long as you do not inquire about the spiritual value of life, this is the question. As long as we do not make inquiries about the value of our spiritual life, then Rishabhdev says, you will be defeated. You'll be defeated. And what will happen? You will be subjected to miseries that come from ignorance. That is why a devotee is not defeated. Because a devotee always is inquiring about spiritual life. And how does he inquire about spiritual life? By always discussing and studying Srila Prabhupada's books. This is the bona fide way of inquiry. Always asking questions related to devotional service. And after asking questions, not just asking and asking and asking until he dies. There are some people who will ask million questions from a million people, get million answers, and then tomorrow ask the same question again. They will not act on it. They will become what we call armchair philosophers. That is not what Prabhupada wanted either. There's no point asking and asking and asking till the cows come home and never acting on what we ask. That's why Rishabhdev says, you please inquire about the spiritual value of life. Otherwise, you are defeated. You will lose this material world. You will lose to the material world. Then he says, be it sinful or be it pious, karma always has its resultant actions. If you don't have Krishna, you will always have karma. That's why we always ask, you're a member, but which ISKCON are you a member of? Are you a member of the International Society for Karmic Consciousness? Or are you a member of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness? They're both K's. But if you want sense gratification, then karma must come. And Rishabhdev tells us, if a person is engaged in any kind of karma, his mind is known as karmatmakam. In other words, it is very, very colorful. With what? Fruitive activities. So our mood is not karmatmakam. Our mood is to become devotees. Smritya harihi bhagavata pradana. As long as you are caught by material enjoyment, you must enjoy the good and the bad. That is why in another lecture, Prabhupada uses another allegory. He says that the super soul, Krishna, is in the heart of every living entity. Sarvasya chaham hriddhi sannivishto. But the living entity is also in that same part of the heart. And instead of using the idea of the bird, you know, two birds sitting on the branch, that's very famous. We hear that. One bird is chewing the fruit, and according to whether the fruit tastes good or the fruit doesn't taste good, the bird some days is happy, some days is not. But the bird who is the well-wisher, the super soul, he is always steady. Why? Because he doesn't eat the fruit. So it's not today very nice fruit, tomorrow not good fruit. Just don't eat the fruit. Why to be disturbed? Because if today the food is very nice or the fruit is very nice, tomorrow you will expect that the fruit must be nice. And even if it's a drop by 5%, you cannot accept it. But the super soul shows us the way. Why to eat the fruit in the first place? If you chant Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, then that becomes spiritually so filling that there's no need for us to run hither and thither to get sense gratification. We don't have to. That is why it is very important for us to understand that we must inquire about spiritual life. This is the reason why we are here. That is why Prabhupada created this program. This program in Gauranga Center was not created by you and me. It was created by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. Why? Because in this assembly, we can hear about Krishna, and we can chant about Krishna, and we can remember about Krishna. Smritya harihi. And if we remember Krishna, then we discuss about Krishna. Then we inquire about Krishna. Then we will go back to Krishna. This is the only way. Krishna matihi, then there is Krishna ratihi. You cannot be attracted to Krishna until you become attentive to Krishna. If you are attentive to your body and your sense enjoyment, how can you pay attention to Krishna? But if you pay attention to Krishna, Krishna takes care of your body and you just do nice devotional service. We become free. This is the practical point of it. That is why the materialist doesn't realize in 332 of Srimad Bhagavatam, not 32, but 30th chapter, second verse, very famous verse. Yam yam artham upadate, dukkena shukka hetave, tam tam dunoti bhagavan puman sochati antakrit. No, yat krite, puman sochati yat krite. If you read the translation, it's very nice. Kapila Dev tells us that whatever is produced by the materialist with great pain and labor, for what? For happiness. We work very hard for happiness. But whatever we produce in this world, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, by the force of time, He destroys it. And Prabhu's Mataji's, when He destroys it, what happens to us? Sochati. We lament. We lament. Why? Because we think it belongs to us. That is why in the fourth canto, like I was telling, between the 26th chapter all the way to the 28th chapter, you find this very nice, wonderful episode in Bhagavatam of Puranjana. And Puranjana's episode is very, very instructive to us because it tells us very nicely this verse. And if you read the whole chapter of Puranjana, you'll find Prabhupada quotes 220 of Bhagavad Gita no less than three times. No less than three times. Because by telling us the nature of the soul and contrasting it with Puranjana, we come to understand what we are missing. This is how Prabhupada expertly refers the lecture, or rather the verse, in the episode of Bhagavatam. In Bhagavatam, what happens is there is a story told by Narada Muni. And Narada Muni tells this story to a king, Prachina Barhisit. Prachina Barhisit was very caught up with sense enjoyment. He thought his life was just meant to just do whatever I want and whenever I want and only for myself. And maybe I will extend it to those who are dear to me, my children, my family. But that which is not dear to me, I don't want. And this is how most of us live in this world, just to enjoy, have a good time. Sometimes you ask people, no matter how old they are, they still tell you, no, I want to enjoy, I want to enjoy. But they don't realize that enjoyment in material world through the body will only bring disappointment. It will not bring happiness. So one time, in order to teach Prachina Barhisit this point, Narada Muni, thought, better I teach him through a story. Sometimes when you want to teach someone something, you don't tell them directly because he's a king, and he may just, decide to have a big ego and say, how can you tell me this? So Narada Muni is very expert. So he told him, king, once long ago, there was a beautiful kingdom. In that kingdom, there was 9 gates. And that kingdom was so wonderful that everything in that kingdom was perfect. Now, it so also happened to exist that in that world where this kingdom was, there was a very great personality known as Puranjana. And Puranjana was like a king, very heroic personality. He was just traveling the whole earth. Why? Because he wanted to find a place where he could completely enjoy his senses. So he moved around and roamed around, seeing, can I find it here? Can I find it there? But wherever he went, he couldn't find that perfect place to enjoy. Now, Puranjana had a friend who traveled with him wherever he went. And his friend's name was Avinyataha. And Avinyataha by Sanskrit means the unknown one. Sometimes Avinyataha also means imperceptible. In the fourth canto, 26th chapter, Avinyataha means one who is unknown. In the first canto, 13th chapter, when Vidura speaks to Dhritarashtra, the word Avinyataha is used, but it means imperceptible. That means he was a friend and he was always going with Puranjana wherever Puranjana went. So if Puranjana went this place, Avinyataha would go. But Puranjana never consulted Avinyata. Actually, Puranjana very often neglected Avinyata. He didn't spend time with him at all. But Avinyataha was always his well-wisher. The time came, Bhagavatam tells us, when he was looking around and he came across the city of 9 gates. And when he came to the city of 9 gates, he and Avinyataha walked into the city. And Bhagavatam's description of the city is beautiful. So many verses are there. Everything about the city was so sadhu in that sense that even the animals in the city were not violent. They had become so much in the mode of goodness, so to speak, because everything was so luxurious. Even the animals were very tame. So when Puranjana walked into this place, he thought, this is heaven. This is the place where I should stay. I should make this place into my home. Now, as he was walking down the road, he tried to see if there was anyone around. And Bhagavatam tells us, suddenly, he saw a very beautiful lady who was coming in front of him. Bhagavatam says that the lady's beauty was mesmerizing. And behind the lady, she had 10 maidservants. And amongst the maidservants, there was an 11th maidservant, the chief maidservant. And then behind each of these maidservants, there were hundreds of other servants. And these hundreds of other servants were serving the maidservants. And these maidservants were under the chief maidservant. And the chief maidservant was with the lady. And behind this entire entourage, Narada Muni said, there was a huge five-hooded serpent, very powerful serpent, walking around like a security guard, you know. So when Puranjana saw this lady, he was immediately attracted to her beauty. But he noticed one thing about the lady. She was very restless. She was looking hither and thither, not knowing what to do, searching but not knowing the purpose of her search. So Puranjana is a hero, you know. And he walks up to her and he says, beautiful maiden, you look like you are searching for something. I am also searching for something. And you are very beautiful. And the question in Bhagavatam people ask when they say you are very beautiful is, are you married? You know. So Puranjana also turned to her. And eventually after praising her in four or five shlokas, he says, are you with someone? Are you married? And of course by then, his charm and personality was so nice that Bhagavatam tells us the lady herself began to smile at this heroic gentleman and said, dear sir, actually just as much as you are attracted to my beauty, I find myself attracted to your heroism, your qualities. You know, it's very common in this material world that this attraction starts very quickly, especially when we are very attached to the body. So what happens is, the lady says that I'm very pleased that you have come to my city. This is my city, by the way. So Puranjana said, I'm very happy. So you stay here? She says, yeah, I stay here. So Puranjana then asked her a very important question. Where have you come from? You know, and what are you doing in the city? Very interestingly, she replies. She says, dear sir, I really don't know what I'm doing in the city. I have no idea of the purpose for which I am here. And very frankly, if you ask me why I'm here, I can't tell you why I'm here. I just know I'm here. That's it. These maidservants behind me, they always serve me. And now because you want to come into the city, you have become my guest. And since you are very attracted to me, I am also very attracted to you. So why don't we unite as a couple? And every day let me and my 11 maidservants, plus the hundreds of maidservants behind the 11 maidservants, and my serpent who is guarding the city very nicely, let us all be at your disposal, Puranjana. And we will be very happy. And then she said, my dear sir, there's something else also. This body has 9 gates. If you open any of these gates anywhere, you will enter into a beautiful kingdom beyond this kingdom. But it is only attainable if you walk through that gate. And in each of these gates, there is a specific enjoyment you get. And you can spend whole day there and then come back in the evening to see me if you want. So Puranjana got married to this beautiful lady. Avinyataha, his friend, also stayed with him. So Puranjana told Avinyata, today, my dear friend, let us go to gate number 1. So they'll open the gate number 1. And there they would enjoy. Next day, hey, we haven't gone to gate number 2. Let's go to gate number 2. So like that, they would go to different gates. And like this, 100 years passed in the city. But Puranjana became so attached to his queen that when she sat up, he sat up. When she sat down, he sat down. When she stood up, he stood up. When she cried, he cried. When she drank, he drank. When she became very, very upset, he became very upset. Every movement of Puranjana was mirrored by the actions of the lady. And even though he was there, he, because of his lust for her and the purpose of enjoyment that they both had, Puranjana had 1,100 sons. And Bhagavatam tells us he had 100 daughters. I don't know why 1,000 and then 100, but that's what Bhagavatam says. And all these children of his, he had to maintain them. So Bhagavatam tells us he was always busy in the city, enjoying, maintaining. Enjoying, maintaining. The harder he worked to maintain, the harder he worked to enjoy. And that way, 100 years pass. But he didn't realize to maintain this family of hundreds and hundreds, because they got married, then they had their in-laws, and then they had their children, and it went on and on and on. And he didn't understand that with all this paraphernalia, he was completely absorbed in fruitive activities, day and night. So much so as the verse I told you that Kapila Dev says, for a fraction of happiness, he had to endure so much difficulty. You know, it's like in Singapore or any other country, you work very hard like a donkey, isn't it, for a whole month. At the end of the month, you are given your paycheck. You look very pleased when you see it. You take it back, then with the paycheck comes all the bills. And then when you pay off all the bills and then you look at the balance, you think, my God, after so much hard work, this is all that's left. And then another month of struggle like a donkey. So actually, that's our life, actually, you know. And even though we say the donkey is a celebrated fool of the animal kingdom, so if we work like donkeys, then what does it say about us, you know? This is the point that Bhagavatam wants us to consider. So then Puranjana, there came a time when after 100 years, somebody was watching this city. And his name was Chandavega. Chandavega was a Gandharva king. He had 360 sons, 360 daughters. But they were all warriors. And Chandavega was always spending his time trying to find which kingdom I can invade. In Sanskrit, Chandavega means that which passes very swiftly. It's another name for time. Chandavega, that which passes very swiftly. So Chandavega watched and watched this kingdom. And sometimes we think nobody's watching us, you know, as we are growing old. But we don't realize that we are growing old because somebody has been watching us. Time is making us grow old. That is why we are growing old. But we forget. And we forget. We tell ourselves, never mind, towards the end of my life, I will chant, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. I'll give up everything. And by that time, we are dead. And all the plans are gone. It's very difficult. You ask anyone who is passing, and they will tell you that until you have had a lifetime of remembering Krishna, to leave this body remembering Krishna is very difficult. I am reminded of Lalita Mataji's father, Ravilal Prabhu. And today, in honor of him, you know, we are just going to speak something on him. And I think some of his relatives and well-wishers are here today with us. And I saw him personally the day before he left. And his consciousness was intact. Why? Because he was always remembering the Lord. He spent an entire life just raising his children, working hard and always chanting whenever he could. This was a life. So Puranjana did not have that life. So when the time came, Chandavega said, my dear sons and daughters, let us do one thing. Let us now invade this great city because it's time for us to take over. So in the night, Chandavega with his 360 Gandharva sons and daughters, they invaded. And once they invaded, the city was caught on fire. Puranjana wakes up in the middle of the night and realizes the city is being plundered. There are soldiers coming in from all over the place. And the moment Chandavega walked into the city, because he's time, right? Time was not on the city side anymore. Time was on Chandavega's side because he's time. Chandavega had a sister, you know, and his sister's name was Jara. Jara means old age. And she's also known as Kala Kanya. She's also known as Durbhaga. Durbhaga means that one who is very, very unfortunate and one who is very ill-fated. Why? Because old age is always unfortunate, isn't it? You want to enjoy, but now no more teeth. How to eat, you know? Very difficult. You want to bite something that's really nice, but you can't. You tell them, you know, make it very soft, but you can't. Pakoras you can't eat. This and that you can't eat. You feel it. But why? Because Jara has taken over. Old age. So Chandavega had one weapon. Because while the soldiers came to invade this country, Bhagavatam tells us the snake, it fought very hard. The snake fought hard over and over and over. And many of the soldiers were dying. Then Chandavega said, I have my sister, secret weapon number one. Secret weapon, when I unleash, she's very powerful. She will kill. So when Jara walked into the city, she did one thing. She just embraced every person in the city she could find. So when you embrace Jara, what happens to us? We all become weakened, isn't it? Because Jara is old age. You don't want to embrace Jarrah, but Jarrah will embrace you. Because the nature of old age is that it will embrace you. So she went around embracing everyone. And she was looking for a husband, you know. Bhagavatam tells us. Because nobody wanted to get married to old age. Right? We all want to get married to young age. But nobody wants old age. So Jarrah was looking around, but she could not find anyone. So what happened was, the king had a great powerful warrior who came with him. And his name was Bhaya. Weapon number two. So now after unleashing Jarrah, he unleashed Bhaya. And when Bhaya walked into the city, Bhagavatam tells us, not only were all the soldiers and the serpent already becoming old, deteriorating because of old age, but more importantly now, they were struck with fear. Fear, fear. When old age comes, we realize we cannot enjoy. And at that point of time, fear takes over. And the final point that came was the serpent tried very hard and it still could not. It was still fighting very hard. Puranjana's mood is important now. Bhagavatam tells us Puranjana looked everywhere. He realized that all my wealth is going. My children, what will happen to them? Then he was thinking, what will happen to my dear wife whom I stayed with all my life? And as he spoke like this, instead of remembering at the end of his life what is the purpose of his life, instead of at least remembering that one friend he had, you remember he had a friend? That friend was Avinyata. The friend was still next to him. But he looked everywhere for all the things that he thought belonged to him. But he never looked out for Avinyata. And so the powerful serpent was eventually subdued when the final weapon, number three, was released. And this release of the weapon was the powerful, what we call, the fever that comes to us when we die. It is known in Sanskrit as pavajra. Very powerful. It is stated in Bhagavatam that when one is going to die, our body reaches a temperature of about 107 degrees. Prabhupada writes that in his purport. 107 degrees is the temperature of the body. And if you have worked with people who left their bodies, you will realize that there's a point just before they leave when the temperature and their pressure actually goes very, very, very high. And there is evidence for it in Bhagavatam. So when the last weapon was unleashed in the form of the high heat of temperature, it burned the serpent. The serpent got burnt. And when the serpent got burnt, when you want to flush out a serpent from its house, what do? You burn the house, the serpent will run. And the moment the serpent found that fire was coming, it left. The moment it left, the whole city, the beautiful city of Nine Gates, collapsed. And Puranjana was dragged by Chandavega by the ropes of death. And he was dragged to the hellish planets. And even as he was being dragged, as the last bit of his life was there, Puranjana was thinking, what will happen to my dear wife? What will happen to my dear wife? What will happen to my dear wife? How do I save her? Instead of remembering Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. He forgot. So in the next life, he had to take body, isn't it? Based on 554, 555 of Srimad Bhagavatam, the rule is clear. He had to take a body. But because he remembered his wife so much, in the next life, he took the form of a woman. That's why I remember my Guru Maharaj said, if you remember sari before you die, in next life you become sari. If you remember dhoti before you die, next life you will have to become dhoti. So instead of remembering sari and dhoti, better you remember Krishna. Right? So this is the point. So Puranjana then in the end became Puranjani. And he became the she. And her name was actually Vaidarbhi. Because she was the daughter of the king of Vidarbha at that time. Vaidarbha. So she became a very, very devoted wife to a great king known as Malayadhwaj. And Malayadhwaj actually came from an exalted family of pious people. So what happens is Puranjani serves Malayadhwaj very nicely in this life. And because he's a devotee, she slowly serves him and she also becomes devotee. Devotee in the sense that her heart becomes conscious of the fact that she should not be attached to the body. When Malayadhwaj leaves his kingdom, Bhagavatam tells us he returns to the forest. And there he led a life of penance and austerity. And this Puranjani also, in following the orders and submissively serving her husband, she also became very simple, very austere. And when he devoted himself to remembering the Supreme Lotus of the Supreme, the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, she did the same. And one day Malayadwaj went into a deep meditation. And while she served him, she realized that his soul was leaving the body. And as his soul left the body, there was only her alone. So we come to the end of the story now, because Puranjani is alone. Once again, just like there he was alone, now again he's alone. All his life, her life, she was serving her husband. And that way she became very strong in her devotional service. But now she felt a little pain, you know, that she's once again alone. So she started crying very piteously in the forest. At that time, an elderly Brahmin came. And the Brahmana comes to her and says, my dear, dear friend, why are you crying? Do you not remember who I am? Do you not remember me? Do you not know that I have been traveling with you through life after life after life? And that even when everyone forgot you, I never forgot you. I was always there. So then she realizes that this person who's a Brahmana was the same person who was Avinyataha in her previous life. And she listens to the voice of the Brahmana. And because she has become conscious of the purpose of her life, Puranjani does not take birth again. And she goes back to Godhead. This is a simple story that Narada Muni tells Prachina Barhisit. We summarized it because it's three full chapters. But the point of what the story stands for is very important. Puranjana is the living entity. Jana means us. Pura means city, you know. Pur. So Puranjana means the living entity. Bhagavatam also tells us that when Puranjana, the living entity, comes into this world, they become attached inevitably to the body. So the body is the city of the nine gates. And the nine gates are the nine different ways in which we enjoy in this material world. We have nine holes into the body. You have the eyes, you have the nose, you have the nostrils, sorry. You have the ears, you have the organs of evacuation, the organs of generation. You count all of them, they are all centers of sense enjoyment. As long as your body is working nice, they can give you pleasure. But when the body deteriorates, each of these nine gates become a source of pain. Isn't it true? Your eye looks very nice until the eye gives you trouble. Your nose is okay until it gets stuck with mucus. Your ears is very nice until you can hear. When you can't hear, then it goes. Your limbs are strong until they are not strong. Your organs of evacuation are all right until they are functioning all right. Once they don't function all right, your body is gone. Once digestion is finished, Ayurveda says everything is finished. So the city of nine gates is the body. If we want to enjoy the nine gates will deteriorate, we will deteriorate. So Puranjana is the living entity. He is the spirit soul. He has the opportunity to either go with the city of nine gates or be with Avinyata. And who is Avinyata? Avinyata is Krishna, the super soul. And Krishna is always with us. Never leaves us, Prabhus and Matajis. But just like Puranjana, we lead a lifetime of wanting to run after everything and anything except Krishna. And when we do that, the result is just like what happened to Puranjana. When Puranjana entered into the body, and when we are in this body, we see this beautiful lady who is none other than intelligence. And where there is intelligence, you see 11 maidservants. The 11 maidservants comprise of the 5 original senses and the 5 working senses, knowledge acquiring and working, coming from the 5 senses we have. And all these 10 senses, they become the slaves to the mistress of the mind. That's why the mind is the 11th maidservant. So the mind controls all the other maidservants. And after that, behind these maidservants, there are hundreds of servants. Why? Because every sense of ours has hundreds of desires. And all these desires are the servants. But we don't realize that very often we think that the servants are our desires. But we don't realize that we have become servants to our desires. It is not the other way. We think that desires are there to serve us, but we don't realize that we are serving our desires. Without Krishna, we are all servants. With Krishna, we are servant, but in the right way. And so you have the last bit after the 11 senses and the 11 maidservants and the hundreds behind was the serpent. And Bhagavatam tells us the serpent represents the 5 different airs in the body. And together, collectively, they become prana, the life air. And the prana is the one that keeps the whole body awake and alive. And the day when Chandavega time comes and the body becomes deteriorated, that day old age will walk into our lives. That day, Kalakanya, old age, ill fortune, will arrive with her brother, Bhaya, fear. Because where we deteriorate, we become fearful. Because we think we cannot enjoy. And once fear comes and once old age is there, the body eventually is wiped out. And at the point of being wiped out, this high fever comes and the body is completely smashed. At that time, if we are caught and attached to our intelligence, which is attached to sense gratification, then we cannot go back to Krishna. That's why this lady is very important. This lady is intelligence. In the purport, to conclude, Prabhupada says, Krishna gives us education and enlightenment on how to come to Him. Two E's. This education and enlightenment can only come on the basis of intelligence being used for Krishna. If intelligence is not used for Krishna, then intelligence is lost. That's why when Puranjana asked this lady, do you know what you're doing here? What did she say? I don't know. I don't know where I've come from and I don't know where I'm going. Whenever we are attached to material enjoyment, our intelligence is lost. Literally lost. We don't know where we are going. We don't know what is the purpose of life. That is why when Puranjana left that body, because he was so attached to misguided mind and intelligence, he took on the body of his attachment. And he became a lady. He could have been a man. He could have been anything. But he forgot Krishna. But Krishna is so kind. The lesson of Puranjana is Krishna is so kind, Prabhus and Matajis, that at the end, as long as we have some form of association of devotees, in this case, the association was through Malayadwaj. Malayadwaj. And Malayadwaj represents in Bhagavatam the spiritual master. Because Puranjana as a lady served Malayadwaj the way a disciple served the spiritual master with faith and devotion. At the end, even though the spiritual master physically left, the disciple was not bewildered. Because Krishna is the spiritual master inside the heart, he is also the spiritual master outside. And that is why when one takes up the spiritual path, under the guidance of the spiritual master, one becomes very peaceful. This is the point that we must understand. If you want to come to Krishna consciousness, if you want to come out of the clutches of the material body, the best way to come out is to take up nice devotional service. Prabhupada defines consciousness as the symptom of the soul. Do you know why this is important here, Prabhus and Matajis? Because intelligence is the cornerstone of consciousness. If one uses intelligence wisely, one's consciousness can be very well utilized for Krishna. And do you know what is the cornerstone for consciousness? The symptom of one who is Krishna conscious is always the sincere inquirer. I want to end with a verse that's very important. It is found in 1.39 of Bhagavatam. In there, Sukadeva Goswami and Suta Goswami say this nice point. Ateha danya bhagavantamittam yadva sudeve akila lokanate kurvanti sarvad makaman mabhavam na yatrabhuya parivarta ugraha. The translation is good. There the point is nicely stated by Suta Goswami. Only by making inquiries in the world about who? About Krishna. Can one become successful? Can one become perfectly conscious? Why? What is the effect of reading and studying and asking about Krishna? Bhagavatam gives us the answer. If you inquire about Krishna, these inquiries invoke transcendental ecstatic love for Him. just by inquiring about Krishna, Krishna will allow us to have transcendental love for Him. It invokes transcendental love. And this is the way that guarantees 100% immunity from the cycle of birth and death. Jai Granthraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki. Jai Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki. Srila Prabhupada ki. Nitai Gaura Premanande. I can take one question. And then we have a very important presentation. Yes, Mataji. Do you need the mic? I think the mic's being used. I think I can repeat your question. That's okay. He wants to ask a question? Okay. Okay. Theoretically. It's easy to understand theoretically that the gross body is not the actual. That we are not the gross body, okay? The mind is not the soul. The intelligence is not the soul.
Our personality, who we are.
Our natures. Yes.
Are these a part of the soul at all? Or will these continue after our gross body deteriorates?
Very good question. Basically, will our nature as we are, our personality, are they part of the soul? Are they manifestations of the soul? Meaning that when the body goes, will the soul continue to have this nature, perhaps in another body? Right? Very good question. Actually, the answer is in the verse. It's also in the first part of Bhagavad Gita. If you read this verse, strictly speaking, Prabhupada says the body, the soul has no birth and no death. It has nothing to do with the body. But Prabhupada also says, and Bhagavad Gita also says, that soul is consciousness. Which means whatever that is going on to keep the body alive is actually the indication of the presence of the soul. But Shastras tell us that the soul has a nature. Its nature is blissful. Its nature is to be cognizant, at least of itself. And its nature is always to understand that it is part and parcel of Krishna. This is the actual personality of the soul. So if the personality of the soul in these three things manifests itself in your life now, then you are very closely connected to your soul. Do you understand? If you are cognizant of the purpose of life, if you are happy because you're cognizant of the purpose of your life, Anand, and you're blissful doing devotional service, and if you understand that the whole purpose of life is actually to be to serve the spiritual master or the devotees and Krishna, then these three are the real natures of the soul. Then what happens is, Mataji, according to our previous karmas, we are born with certain natures. These natures are impressed on our subtle body and carried to the material gross body. They manifest because now we are wearing this body. But if the soul's consciousness is strong because of devotional service, then whatever nature that we have will be dovetailed towards these three manifested natures of the soul. So you can have someone who's angry by nature using his anger for devotional service. You find many advanced devotees sometimes a bit short on fuse. Happens. Do you find devotees who are born extra patient? You ask people who knew them before devotees, they tell you before he was devotee, he was really sadhu. But the important thing is whatever nature we have before we come to Krishna consciousness, if these three symptoms of the soul come out, then that nature that we have also becomes Krishnaized. They no longer become an impediment to us, but instead they become something that we can use in Krishna's service. Hanuman had his strength and he used it for Krishna. He didn't know how to find the right herb to actually bring for Lakshman. But he knew that I could carry a mountain. So he carried the whole mountain. It's like, I don't know what medicine's in the pharmacy, but let me carry the pharmacy to you. That's what he did. You know, I don't know which doctor is good, but let me kidnap a doctor and bring him down to the patient. Like that. So he used what he had. You see? So every devotee in Bhagavatam utilized their nature in the service of Krishna. And when they did that, they became blissful. They understood they were subordinate to Krishna. And they were cognizant and conscious of their position. And that is their nature. Very good question. But you see the point now? Is it clear? So as long as these three things are there, we know that we are coming closer to Krishna consciousness. And of all these three things, I will end by asking you, or telling you, sharing with you, that the most important symptom of Krishna consciousness is, you should all smile when you come to this center. All of you should be happy. After all this big tattva, if you cannot smile and you cannot be happy, please go back to your old life. Then this movement has not served you. So sometimes devotees forget, you know, in all these things we do everything and we stand before everyone and we look really sad. And then people think, my God, this is what's going to happen to me after 10 years. I don't want Krishna consciousness. Thank you very much, Prabhu. No. We must become ambassadors of genuine smiles. This is such a nice movement. Never mind if the devotee next to me, I feel like killing him. At least he's a nice person to kill, you know. It's all right. It's all right. We have our differences, but we are for Krishna. This is the mood of devotees. Is that all right? Thank you very much. It's so nice to see all the devotees. Remember, read Srila Prabhupada's books daily. Bury your head. The moment you become morose, open Srila Prabhupada's books. The moment you're happy, open Srila Prabhupada's books. The moment you're going to know that you're going to get married, please read Srila Prabhupada's books. Right? And you know when you're going to fall sick, you please increase your time with Srila Prabhupada's books. And that will save you. Hare Krishna. Now we have His Grace Sarangan Prabhu. Sarangan Prabhu is part of a very dedicated team of Sastradhan and Book